Welcome to another episode of Connected Tech Talks, a podcast from ITS. I've got my usual co-host with me, Catherine McNamara. I'm delighted to be joined today by Mike Cox from Ask4, who are a big one of our partners and massive in student accommodation, built to rent and various other things. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. So just to start with, can you give us a little bit of a background just to Ask4 and to your role?
Sure. So Ask4 started off in 2000, providing internet access in residential multi-tenant buildings. Our founder just was sort of doing it on the side. If that hadn't worked out, he was going to go to university. He never went to university. He now doesn't need to do it that much. So things have gone really well for the business. So over the years, we've grown. We now operate primarily in purpose-built student accommodation across UK and Europe. And our secondary market is built to rent. So we're an MDU, multi-dwelling unit, residential, Wi-Fi specialist, effectively. And our special source is the fact that we can provide pervasive Wi-Fi through these buildings without any interference. And we've also got a USP in that we're Wi-Fi vendor agnostic. So okay. We can use any Wi-Fi vendor on our system and all of our products work seamlessly, whereas most of our competitors have to use the vendor's inbuilt products.
And where do you fit in that big machine?
I deliver all the stuff personally. I run around the country. I'm the provisioning director. So we've got the delivery project management teams. Actually, as of yesterday, I now run internal program and our client delivery program, developing all the new bits and bobs and delivering all of our orders for our sales colleagues. So we've got project management teams, we've got design teams, all field engineering, I've got the technical config guys in my squad. And of course, I'm also accountable for access networks to the whole business.
Okay. Jeez. No pressure then.
Yeah, no. Small the best bit. Small the best bit. You get to go and do podcasts.
That's it. Absolutely. There's also something that every time I'm in your office, the stat that astounds me as you walk up the stairs from coming in, there's a stat around the first building you connected and how low the bandwidth was in there. So we gave these students like 0.1 meg of bandwidth and they were over the moon.
It's crazy. And now a gig is advanced enough.
Yeah.
Lots of technological change across the industry, challenges, opportunities. How do you approach the adoption of new technologies that Ask4?
So we've got people out in different areas. So we've got our marketing teams looking at what's going on in the competitive landscape. We've got our sales guys out with our sales guys and our pre-sales guys out with our clients saying, what do you need? What's coming up? Then we've got people in our product development side who are out looking at new technologies that we could adopt and give us an advantage. And then we've got people that just listen to all of that and invent stuff. So really, it's a collaborative approach. We bring virtual teams together to say, what do we need to be doing? The latest thing that we're looking at is AI and how we're using AI within the business. And we've got some really exciting things coming up that we can't talk about yet, but further to our vendor agnostic ability to do clever things, we're looking at how we can integrate AI into our network technology, which I don't think is the unique thing, but we'll try and do it in a unique way for MDU.
You have to come back on season two to tell us about that one.
Once you can
let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
Season two. Look at me being all forward thinking.
Obviously, we talked just before about that kind of bandwidth growth. What else are those kind of, typically students that you serve, and what else are they demanding now that maybe they weren't a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago?
Well, the end users themselves, the demand is pretty much the same, but faster and more of it as, for example, games get bigger.
Yeah.
In October, Call of Duty download or whatever, I'm not a gamer, just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But actually, it's our clients, that the building owners and the building management companies are requiring more and more data from the site. What are the users in the rooms doing in terms of what they're having the temperature at? Is the window open? Are the curtains open? Are they leaving the lights on? How often are they boiling the kettle? All that sort of stuff. So,
More important for your client base and kind of thinking about IoT, AI data you can present. Actually, the core bit is, these people here need some internet, but actually the secondary piece is kind of the data that exists in those buildings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reality is the connectivity piece is commoditized, right? Particularly in the UK, which is, in terms of student accommodation, is a bit further ahead in its evolution than Europe. And so the connectivity piece is almost seen as a bit of a given Now, we have to try really hard to make people understand that our connectivity is better and why it's better, because it is. But it's the add-on bits of data. It's all that BI stuff that the clients really want to see now.
Is that the bit that's different in Europe, or is it just the whole market's less mature? You're in a few countries, don't you?
Yeah. I think we're in 11 or 12 countries. Most of the big university countries we've got coverage in Europe. The difference really is in maturity. The UK jumped to purpose-built MDU, student accommodation, before most of the other European countries. So they are catching up fast, but we still see... So in Germany, for example, there's an awful lot of state-owned student accommodation still, much like, you know,
old halls of residence kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely right. In Italy, people tended to stay at home and go to their local university. Yeah. Now they're starting to move out and go to others. So it's all evolving.
How do you balance then because there's obviously a big push on kind of what happens next, how you evolve kind of the portfolio and that kind of innovative piece versus the balance of providing a really operationally efficient kind of product and service? How does the company balance it?
So operational efficiency is a key driver for us. We want to be able to deliver everything as quickly as possible and realise revenues as soon as possible. So it's really, really important. And then what we've been working on the last few years is making sure whilst that smooth operational deficiency of the base internet product can happen, we can also evolve really quickly to do the additional add-ons. The balance piece is interesting. What we've had for the last couple of years is a team within the business that operate on all the new and exciting shiny stuff. And then my team were running all the BAU, less shiny, commoditized bits. So we're now moving. So we've built a specific team within my squad now to take on the new shiny. And we've got a separate team that run the BAU bits. So we're trying to create operational efficiency while staying dynamic and agile. And it's pretty hard to do. Speak to any software development team that have to run ops and development. Mm. And it's that sort of similar challenge, which I think we're winning at. It's a case of having enough process that you can measure and monitor what's going on numerically, whilst having people in the business that can also work in an agile way. And we can still deliver things that aren't necessarily built into all our management systems.
So kind of get your happy path stuff that's kind of you need to just manage in bulk.
Yeah.
But the ability to drop down from that when something either falls off the happy path or customer's got something that's a bit outlandish as a request that you want to try and help.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess that's really important in terms of staying current and competitive as well, right?
Yeah.
Can you still get that kind of burst? So my experience of working anything to do with student is it's all very nice and quiet and you're having some nice chats till about May. And then in June, everything goes wild, and then you've got to deliver a lot of what you've sold kind of in that summer window. Is that still kind of a big peak for you?
Yeah, so we delivered 40% of our order books, and we got delayed in the last 2 weeks of August. So the annual order book, 40% of it in 2 weeks, it is insane.
Yeah.
We have a massive scaling operation to do every year where we, in our client support teams, we bring in temps. We use a bunch of outsourced providers. Mm. We've got some really good partners around the UK and Europe that allow us to scale up every summer and then scale back down. So our field engineers spend the winter being field engineers and the summer being field managers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
How do you celebrate success at the end of that?
It's not my strong point.
Turkish. Yeah. There's a Turkish restaurant in Sheffield just around the corner from their office, and we just go all the time.
Let's just go and get a kebab, eh?
Yes. So you were there.
We're doing a little night out at the end of this summer period. Mm. The problem you get is everybody is dead.
Absolutely.
End of October. And actually, the last thing they want to do is go and see any more colleagues.
Yeah.
So it's quite a tricky one. Mm. But we do, just as a business, we have a winter town hall and a summer town hall and a bit of a party that goes along with it. We try to celebrate those things. But I think we need to get better at recognising internally that we've done a really good job.
That's it. Cause to deliver 50% of your order book a fortnight is just... it's outstanding. And obviously, it's the world you need to exist within. And anybody else playing in the same sector has probably got the same challenges. But it's hard to get people to really knock their pan out for a few short weeks, even.
Yeah, it is the nature of the beast, though. People join and we go, "Have you done a summer yet?"
That's it.
How many summers have you done then?
I'm 23 years old. It's pretty tough.
So, no holidays in summer then?
No, that's part of the problem. Oh, yeah, my wife loves it. Not. She loves school summer holidays and she's doing it.
It's your knee deep in it.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, it's one of the downsides of PBSA. But on the other hand, holidays are cheaper outside of that.
Of course they are, yeah, so absolutely.
That's what I tell everybody.
Do you find the supply chain can cope with your peak? Like, is that where, does that drive problems for you? So if your supply chain's used to a more linear shape of delivery across the year, do you find that they struggle to keep up?
That's a really topical question. Mm. So we've been struggling over the last few years. Love Open Reach, right? We've all got to work Open Reach, but they're so process-oriented that we don't have a relationship with them enough to sort of say, right, we need you to build up to peak for us. Mm. This is the deadline. We've got to hit that deadline, otherwise we've got 1,000 students with no internet. Have you got any idea what that's like? So that doesn't really work. And so we're diversifying our partner base to find more flexible partners. I mean, why I'm sat here with ITS, right? You guys are absolutely bringing the flexibility that we used to get from the whole base of suppliers 10, 20 years ago. We just don't have any more. Yeah. The pressure, the commodity pressure on Ethernet has meant that everybody's slowly getting more and more process-driven, which doesn't allow us to get the nuanced delivery that we need. Yeah, and that's a big thing. In terms of hardware delivery, we're generally, you know, we put in a lot of access points every year. So that generally isn't a problem. We've got a brilliant procurement team. We've got everything stocked ready to go for the summer. But yeah, in terms of getting connectivity, it's particularly painful in Germany.
Okay. The fibre market's so immature in Germany. I was reading up on it recently. I was surprised.
They don't care as much about connectivity yet.
Mm.
It's not become that staple have to have that it feels like in this country. Something, if internet goes down in Germany, it'll go, oh yeah, we'll get to it.
It surprises me, because when you think of Germany, you think operational efficiency. And then you think, you hear stories about the fibre market there, but it's just not that, is it?
It's just not there. No, if you've got any civils to do, average lead time across the big three providers is about 1 year.
Wow.
If that's an example of kind of probably a bit of a slow, apathetic, could we say, view of it, and you've mentioned kind of your location based in other countries, where's kind of the best territory that you've experienced kind of doing this in?
Well, bizarrely, it's Spain.
Okay.
And you wouldn't expect that because, of course, it's not that long ago that the big Spanish telco was state-owned.
Yeah.
So it's really, in terms of telco, it's quite an immature market. Mm. It's not evolved. It's not as competitive. There's not as much overbuild. Mm. So you don't see the competition you get in other countries around Europe. However, we've got an amazing partner. No hints here. But what they'll do is we'll order a fibre from them. If that fibre's late, they'll put in a point-to-point radio. If the point-to-point radio is late, they'll do it on LTE for us.
Mm.
So it's a managed package, and it's a really competitive wholesale rate. We've not found anyone else that will do that for us around Europe.
Mm.
But to be really clear, Spain is not as cost-effective as the UK. So they're still probably working at higher margins in the UK market. So it's probably too much to expect.
So I guess what you're gaining in the fact they haven't got as much competition and operators is a bit more flexibility, the ability to do stuff, but they've got higher margins in order to do it. And I think it's always surprised me, or certainly maybe not surprised, but what I've seen in Spain is they've rolled out fibre quickly. They've certainly got fibre past kind of 90-odd% of properties really fast. And then they've also rolled out 5G really well. It's everywhere you go when you're out there, compared to, I think, in the UK, it's still sporadic. And even if you have got it, it might not work. It feels like the Spanish have got a grip of some of that connectivity stuff, even if the prices are maybe a bit higher because there's less competition in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's still a really different feel around Spain. And there are some areas of Spain where it may be still have to sort of grease some palms to get things installed properly. Maybe we should cut that bit.
No, that's a good bit. We'll leave that in.
Yeah,
we don't accept words.
Other than cans of Vimto. No,
yeah, it shouldn't be in the drinks cupboard.
So what are the key kind of tools and metrics that the company uses for performance?
Key metrics. So obviously delivery on time for our users.
Mm.
Right first time in terms of we deliver a new building, how many snags we got on that building, how many faults do we get in the first X weeks, standard things that you'd expect. The bit that we're working hard on at the minute is to get better quality measure, and we're introducing a new QMS quality management system at the minute to make sure you know, we've obviously got a bunch of continuing improvement processes that run in the business, but they don't necessarily flow end to end for us. So the sort of hard stats of have we delivered on time, did it work, we've got in and running, B, what's the quality of the installation by individuals, whatever is what we're working on now. And obviously, of course, we do NPS surveys with all of our customers, clients, and try and get a measure in. Not my area, so don't ask me what they are, but I think we're pretty good.
Is there anything happening, going a little bit off piste off the questions here, but is there anything particularly in the market, in the sector, that's caught your eye that you're enjoying following at the moment?
I mean, I'm super focused on AI. I think it's really going to help our teams to standardise and not have to think so much about the content of the work they're doing. Focus on the fundamental content rather than making things sound or feel or read a different way. I think it's really going to transform the sort of people that can come in and do, for example, project management roles.
Yeah.
Where they're not worrying about whether they're coming across in a grumpy way. You just run it through AI and it says, I'd reword it like this to sound more open. I think that's really interesting. In terms of tech, I'm quite excited about the evolution of access points that talk to each other rather than over a wide network. Because one of the biggest challenges we have, particularly go back to Germany, they build everything out of concrete, like everything. So they bury all the cabling in the floor and the walls in concrete.
Can't anything more through. No.
So if you want to recable a building, you're talking each cable. If we can do wireless backhaul and access points, that'd be really exciting. So again, it needs to be low frequency, so it'll move through concrete. I think that'll be a game changer. And the other stuff is, I can't remember the technical term, but sorry, Ethernet over power type stuff.
Yeah.
There's a new standard out for that.
Okay.
Which
it's been a bit flaky in the past, hasn't it?
It has, but there's a new standard, and people are now making enterprise large scale building. So when that comes to fruition, that'll be really exciting because we don't have to put any more paving in the building.
So for somebody that has no idea what that is, how would you explain it in layman's terms?
Using the power cables that exist within your property to carry your data
rather than have
separate data cables. So you can kind of use the infrastructure. So, so I guess to Mike's German example, where they've put everything buried in the building. You kind of get away from that and use that. It's already there without having to rebuild it. I think your AI point's pretty pertinent. Actually, I read a post somebody put on the internet. I don't want AI to do my art so I can do my dishes. I want AI to do my dishes so I can concentrate on my art.
Right.
And I think that's exactly what you're saying. Actually, what we want AI to do is concentrate on the repetition, concentrate on some of the stuff where it can add some value, but actually free up that human power, that powerful brain.
Yeah.
The AI can't replace.
The human in the loop.
Yeah, is that what it's called?
Keep the human in the loop,
The human.
Yeah. Human.
There we go.
Talking more about technology.
Yeah.
Give us a piece of technology you can't live without.
Do you know what? You've given me a preview of this question. I've been thinking about it a lot.
Good. Good.
It's going to be really boring, though. Unfortunately, it's the knife. Now, it might not seem like modern technology, but I was thinking, you've asked what I can't live without. If I lost my phone, I'm not going to die, right? I don't have a knife. I can't catch and kill it.
I think Mike's brought a different angle to this question.
He has, but also, a little like my piece of tech I can't live without, it lives in the kitchen.
It does live in the kitchen. Might live in your camping kit.
Would do,
Live anywhere nice, versatile, more versatile than your
meat thermometer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I thought the reality is it's a bloody mobile phone, but I'm like, that's so boring. Everyone's going to say
Everyone usually says, oh, I'm going to say my mobile phone. I'm not going to say my mobile phone. But I'm going to say my mobile phone.
No,
I like that.
I've got a lovely backwards knife. The one card wouldn't
Look at that.
Just go and live.
I got a really nice one. It's called a bow knife, and it's for cutting bread. So the blade's that way rather than that way, so it cuts across.
You do. My piece of tech I can't live without changes every 5 minutes, I think, is what I realised through these podcasts.
What was it on the last podcast?
I think it was Spotify on my last podcast.
Okay. Right.
I bought a bread maker, and I like making bread, but I've never got the patience or the time to, you know, do it all. I'm loving the bread maker because you just throw all your bits in. And
all you need now is a knife that can cut
it properly. Well, that's why you've made me think.
Spotify, my Beatport subscription is my go-to.
You need music.
Another interesting tangent.
Yeah, you just need all that, don't you? You kind of all doesn't exist on its own, does it? Because you've got your smart speakers that are using your Spotify to pump it out in your house, and then you get in the car and suddenly the same thing's just there. It's all, I think that's one bit where technology helps, the music streaming bit.
Absolutely.
Which has helped artists, but it's definitely helped the listener.
So we've got another question, which you won't have been briefed on, because it's called question from our previous guest.
Yeah, absolutely.
So are you worried? Are you worried about what this question might be?
I was more worried about the one I have to pass on for the next
one. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll be giving that some thought.
So in the current revival of retro, what piece of technology would you bring back and why?
Bring back?
I've not been briefed on this one either. I like this one.
Okay.
You can answer it as well.
Oh, wow. I've got some time to think. Mike, you can go first.
I'm assuming it's not going to be like dial-up internet.
No, definitely not. I mean, I would have said vinyl, but it's not gone. It's already back. I did really love, when I was a kid, we had this thing that plugged into the telly and you could play like tennis.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like a Granada game thing.
Yeah, but it went up the side like that, with the ball going
up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it just went up and down.
Yeah.
And playability-wise, it's probably one of the best games that's ever existed. Mm. And not that they can keep inventing games, but nothing was ever as fun as that for me. So I'd probably want whatever that was called.
In fact, when you go back to them, though, they're not as fun as they were. The nostalgia's not, the game's not as good as the nostalgia. So you download a game you played when you were a kid and you're like, I'm going to play this. I loved it. And you try to show your kids and they're like, this is rubbish.
Yeah.
And you don't want to back down, but you kind of agree.
It's like showing them your favourite films from when you were a kid.
That's
and they
it.
Go, I hate
old films. It's
not that old.
That's it. Absolutely. I've got mine. It's buttons.
What do you mean?
One of the guys in my team got a Tesla, and he said, he'd had an old car for ages. I'll take you for a drive in my Tesla. And he said, I tell you what, you drive it. And I got in, and there's no buttons. The only buttons in it are his indicators, and they've stuck them on the steering wheel, which is weird, because actually the steering wheel moves, so you never know which arrow they're pointing at. But to start it, you have to like slide something up on a screen. Right. But when you're in a car, you kind of want to feel like you're piloting a fighter jet, and you want to be pressing all your buttons. But it's the same, like my dishwasher's got these little things you touch. And if I just get it in the wrong place, it doesn't bleep and turn on. I need buttons back in my life.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you've just done the washing up,
your hands
are wet. Do anything. It just doesn't work.
That's it. Everything's touchy. The extractor thing in my kitchen, touch, touch, touch. Okay. Buttons.
That's reminded me of a better answer. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing I massively miss. My mobile phone with the slide out. Proper
keyboard.
Pressing QWERTY keyboard. Yeah. They were just brilliant.
Oh, really quick. Bang an email out.
Yeah.
Rubbish.
Everything's gone touch. It's not the same. Yeah.
No, I agree.
There we go. Well, that is a fantastic place to end it on. So thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike, for coming. Thank you for your chat.
Thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate you guys inviting me over.
Brilliant. Thanks, Mike.
Good to have you.
Cheers.
Thank you.